On Monday, the International Humanitarian Organization Doctors Without Borders released its 12th annual top 10 list of the worst humanitarian crises of 2009. The plight of civilian populations victimized by conflict and the lack of adequate funding to address pressing health concerns such as HIV/AIDS permeate this year's compilation. In particular, the organization highlighted the pattern of governments blocking crucial aid to populations in need in countries such as Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Sudan. Also noted was a severe hampering of Doctors Without Borders to carry out medical humanitarian work in conflict-ravaged countries such as Yemen and the Democratic Republic of Congo. In addition, the top 10 list focused on public health crises and the inadequate responses of the international community. Chief among them was a reduction and limitation in spending for programs like the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, and the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. The humanitarian organization notes that the timing of decrease in funding couldn't be worse, as demand for assistance by HIV/AIDS patients around the world will increase. Global malnutrition and the lack of an adequate response were also cited as a serious concern. Currently, international spending to combat hunger amounts to $350 million, when the World Bank estimates that $11.8 billion is what is needed. Doctors Without Borders first compiled its list in 1998 in response to a famine in Sudan that was being underreported in the U.S. media. Joining me now on the phone is Dr. Matthew Spitzer. He's the president of Doctors Without Borders USA. Welcome to Uprising, Dr. Spitzer.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, so this is now, what, the 11th year that your organization is putting out this list. First, let me just ask you, how much has this list changed over the past 11 years? Have there been differing countries on this list over the years, or has it remained largely the same?
No, the list continues to change one year after another, although unfortunately sometimes we find ourselves putting having to carry a similar description or a similar context over from one to the next. But for example, this year, Iraq, we decided to not include on the list, largely because of the decline in violence that has occurred from last year and the relative, of course, decrease in needs there, and the feeling that there are other places that really we needed to bring more to people's attention.
And also, how exactly, what is the methodology that you use to come up with these crises, to compile this list of crises? Does it have to do with specific underreporting in the media, or with funding, or both?
Well, it's not funding. The list, like you described, was originally created to address the sense of underreporting. But with time, and especially over the last few years, some of that perception of reporting is really more specific to American-only media, and we wanted this list to be really an international kind of highlighting of key crises. So, and it comes out of very specifically our experience in the field, who our doctors are seeing, who our teams are trying to help, the experience there, and what's happening, and the places where we really feel compelled to bring forth the information and raise people's awareness. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we always have to make choices for the purposes of the list to have, we hope to have an impact with it, but of course it can always be longer. There's always other contexts, other challenges out there that we feel that it's hard not to include.
Let's talk about the issue of AIDS and funding that I mentioned. How severely have the international funds to fight AIDS been cut? And is it essentially due to the economic recession?
Well, I think it's a mix of things, and I don't know if I can say exactly what the cause is. For sure, the economy has had a really major impact on the decision makers and on the ability to look at funding. But there's also been a growing sense we have of complacency that with all the achievements of the last several years, which have been considerable, going from relatively small numbers to 4 million people worldwide on antiretroviral treatment right now, this is an amazing accomplishment that came out of real investment and a real increase in funding to get this done. At the same time, there's some 10 million people in need of treatment just right now, not in the future, but really in danger of dying now. And it's still a real medical emergency just at this moment. And the successes don't mean that there isn't a much more significant need still out there now for funding and to continue to actually expand these programs. It's not a time where we can say we can look at the progress that's been made in the past and say that the job is done is enough.
Now, in addition to the drop in funding for AIDS patients worldwide, one of the top 10 humanitarian crises that your organization, Doctors Without Borders, cites is the issue of lack of research and treatment of neglected diseases. Some of these are diseases that most of us have never heard of. Tell us about these.
Well, the ones that we have asked to really try to have people focus on is what we call the most neglected diseases. These are African sleeping sickness or African trypanosomiasis, Kala Azar, Chagas disease. These are parasitic diseases that affect some around 400 to 500 million people worldwide are at risk of these diseases. But it's the smallest fraction of funding that goes towards these. There's been some success in bringing attention towards HIV, towards TB and malaria, but these diseases have gone really under the radar, and the investment in them is almost negligible in many cases, which means it leaves us in some circumstances treating patients with medicines that are 50, 60, 70 years old. Some of them are directly toxic to patients that we treat, and there's very little progress at all in finding in moving forward on these.
And I'm wondering if you think that essentially when we look at diseases like HIV, AIDS, and other diseases, malaria, tuberculosis that have been around for a while and that there is some public awareness of, is this just a matter of raising awareness and diverting funding to these to research these diseases and the kinds of medication needed for these diseases?
Well, our real important push about this is to have people understand that it's not about assuming that there's just a sum of money that is currently adequate, and if it can just be shifted to the right places, that everything will be okay. There really needs to be an upsurge and an increasing investment from many different places and in many different sectors of actual treatment of patients and not just prevention, actual research and development of new and better tools to treat diseases. If we just sit back and say, well, the world spends some money, and if we just shift it around, it will be enough. This is really not the case. And not only, as I said, does HIV need more money invested into it, but the neglected diseases too need attention, as do other basic things like nutrition for the most vulnerable, particularly children under two, and other things that we actually, there is a need for us to do more.
My guest is Dr. Matthew Spitzer. He's the president of Doctors Without Borders USA. And in fact, it was 10 years ago this year that Médecins Sans Frontières, which is the main organization, Doctors Without Borders, based in France, received the Nobel Peace Prize. Let me ask you to focus now on some of the other areas of this list of top 10 humanitarian crises in the world. Many of them are areas of conflict and war: Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, Sudan, in particular Darfur, Sri Lanka, and Pakistan, although Sri Lanka is arguably coming out of a many decades-long conflict. How do you see these humanitarian crises in these countries coming about as a direct result of the political and military conflicts there?
Well, we know that conflict, whether it's carried out by governments abroad or internal conflict between warring parties in a region, we know these have disastrous consequences for the civilian population in an area. Though it's not really our place, nor do we have the interest to analyze the political causes of these things, that we recognize the severe consequences for the health and well-being of the population, the mortality, the number of people killed either directly by conflict or just through displacement and hunger, and the starvation, the diseases they're exposed to, all these things that happen as a side effect of conflict and displacement and injury.
It's interesting that so many of these countries are countries that the U.S. has direct military operations, Afghanistan and Pakistan. We just covered Yemen and the U.S.'s involvement in the recent airstrikes in Yemen as well. And of course, there's connections in Somalia. The United States has not always played a very constructive role, to say the least. I'm being really nice here, in terms of ignoring the humanitarian crises, particularly when it's alongside wars that they are fighting. Often it seems as though the U.S., instead of working with aid groups like yours to make sure that displaced populations get the kind of food and medical aid they need, the U.S. military will try to deliver that aid themselves. It's that part of their Hearts and Minds campaign, particularly in countries like Afghanistan. And this is an issue that Doctors Without Borders has very publicly spoken out against. Can you talk about your main concern about the militarizing of food aid and whether it's still occurring in Afghanistan?
Well, I think that this is always a difficult issue. We consider that the correct way and the only way to get medical care to the place where it's needed most and to the people who need it most is to do that in an independent and neutral way, to not to take sides in the conflict, not to work with one belligerent or one warring party in a conflict or with another, but to get to the people who need it the most, to make our own decisions, and to be able to deliver that care and to design what programs we can and to enter areas by getting from all parties assurances that we won't be targeted. These are the methods we have and the things we have at our disposal to get to the places where it's needed. And to be able to maintain that independence and the perception that we are there specifically to aid the population and not to be party to one conflict or another, this becomes increasingly difficult when some of the belligerents are trying to provide health services, trying to send some kind of aid or provide other sorts of assistance. It becomes quite difficult sometimes to explain to people and be clear why it is we're there and to be able to get to populations in places that are violent and where security is difficult. It can be very hard to establish that independence when so many of the parties are, in some senses, sometimes co-opting these activities that have traditionally been in the realm of aid organizations like ours.
To tell us a little bit about what's happening in Pakistan right now, where airstrikes in this past year have and military action has displaced, I understand, hundreds of thousands of people, and even two workers with Doctors Without Borders were killed this past year.
Yeah, so there's really been there's a significant number of people who have been directly injured in civilians who have been injured, including children and families by airstrikes and by other attacks, but also the really incredibly large number in the millions of people who have been displaced by the conflict there. Many of them are not in traditional displacement camps, so it's been very difficult to access them in that way. They've fled in different places. Some of the places where the population has gone to are so insecure and dangerous that it's been difficult to access them at all. But the sheer number of violence and how it's moved in the areas has really created a very unstable and very precarious condition for a large number of the population there.
And let's also finally briefly talk about Sudan and Darfur. This is an issue which captured the public's mind a few years ago, and really 2008, I think, was a big year for that. But 2009, public interest or media coverage seemed to have waned a little. How serious is the conflict still over there, humanitarian crisis over there?
Well, I think there's a sense that the acute danger from military activities, the acute fighting in Darfur, has decreased to some degree, but there are still millions of people left there living in very marginal conditions with a minimum of health services available, insufficient food and still really vulnerable people where a lot of the traditional resources have been destroyed and the displacements have affected them. But it's true that the violence has decreased somewhat. What's happened at the same time, and this is starting to show up in some of the newspapers here, but probably not enough, is the increase in violence in South Sudan has come back and in resurgence, and the number of ongoing issues there, the almost complete lack of medical support to the population in South Sudan, and their vulnerability to outbreaks that has been true for years and years. This is leading to a significantly worsening situation there.
Well, Dr. Matthew Spitzer, very briefly, where's a website that listeners can get the whole list, and also what are some of the things that you can recommend people do in this holiday season about some of these crises?
So our website is www.doctorswithoutborders.org. There's actually a tremendous amount of information there. There'll be a direct link to this top 10 crises list, and a lot of background information, including direct accounts from doctors and other staff who have worked in the field and who are providing these services, and there are direct accounts of what they've seen and what they're experiencing in trying to help the people and to telling their stories of the people we're assisting.
And you encourage people to get involved with your organization and other groups?
Please. I mean, when people ask what they can do, the first thing I remind them is actually that they can step up and volunteer to go with us. We have obviously medical and personnel in the field, but are always looking for more volunteers, but also administrators, logisticians, other specialists who bring skills that could help carry out the programs.
And they can do that. They can find out more at doctorswithoutborders.org.
Right. And of course,
we're out of time, unfortunately.
Okay.
Dr. Spitzer, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Dr. Matthew Spitzer, president of Doctors Without Borders USA. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, Vaclav Havel once said, "Genuine politics, even politics worthy of the name, the only politics I'm willing to devote myself to is simply a matter of serving those around us, serving the community, and serving those who will come after us. Its deepest roots are moral because it is a responsibility expressed through action to and for the whole." That's Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day.